Nova Scotians are some of the biggest users of sleeping pills in the country, and researchers and governments are increasingly concerned about the effects of these drugs, which include sedatives and tranquilizers such as lorazepam, diazepam, zopiclone, and Ambien. David Gardner is a pharmacist who teaches at Dalhousie School of Medicine, and his research focuses on improving the safe and effective use of medications, and he's with us this morning. Hi, David.
Good morning. Another wonderful Nova Scotia morning.
It's a lovely one, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Good view from this window.
Absolutely. No fog today.
No. David, how many Nova Scotians are using sleeping pills?
It's a really good question and a hard one to actually answer. So data that we have on the tracking of some of the sleeping pills we have would suggest about 25% of people who are 65 and older here in Nova Scotia are taking at least one sleeping pill per year and probably taking it for several months. When we look at chronic use, then we're at around a rate of 16%. And that's compared to around 10% as the Canadian average. So we're a little bit higher than the Canadian average, and we would like to see that cut down.
And why? Why are you so concerned about sleeping pill use?
I think people probably know some of the side effects of sleeping pills. And the one that has always got a lot of attention is becoming unsteady, becoming a little worried about your unsteadiness, falling, getting injured, going to hospital because of that. But there's sort of a hidden part of that, which is the before you fall, you feel unsteady, so you just don't leave your house. You just don't socialize like you normally would. You just kind of say, I better not go on Friday night with my friends and chat and so forth. So there's a little bit of anxiety, worry, and sometimes depression that comes along with those things. The other things that we worry about, which affects everybody who uses them, is the risk of dependence. And so we call it the sleeping pill vicious cycle. You take the sleeping pill for a few days and it seems to be working great, and then after a while it's working less and less, so you double the dose and it starts to work again a little bit better, and then it works less and less, and then you stop the thing. And guess what happens then? A withdrawal syndrome happens, and the lead characteristic of the withdrawal syndrome is insomnia. And so therefore you have to take the sleeping pill again, which is the vicious cycle, and it reinforces people's belief they need it. So we're worried about dependence, we're worried about withdrawal, we're worried about a variety of side effects, car accidents, people driving and they don't realize they're impaired by the sleeping pill itself. So a whole variety of side effects.
And there's some research suggesting problems with memory and cognitive effects. Is that right?
Right. So if you're a university student, don't take a sleeping pill before you're writing an exam the next day, because it actually interferes with your ability to make memories and use those memories the next day. So that's a concern for some younger users. But older users were quite worried about impaired memory, cognition, being able to recall different things. Just the way your brain works does not work nearly as well. And what we find is when we reduce and stop sleeping pills in an older population, their memory and their thinking clears right up and they actually have a better quality of life. There have been links with the onset of Alzheimer's disease with the use of sleeping pills. It's a correlation that's very hard to determine whether there is causation. So right now we can say there's a link, but we can't say it's a cause of dementia or Alzheimer's disease.
Mm-hmm. Well, when we have so many seniors in Nova Scotia using these drugs, is it possible that there are people out there who believe they have dementia who only are having side effects from sleeping pills?
Oh, absolutely. And this is the beautiful thing about reducing and stopping the use of sleeping pills. They've never been indicated for long-term use. They've never been researched for long-term use. You might be surprised that the 90% of studies on sleeping pills are about 2 weeks long. And the longest ones are rare, where it's into maybe 3 to 4 months. So we've got very little research on more than 4 months, but we do have good research on what happens to you when you stop your sleeping pills. And you could have a withdrawal, but you could also have a life-changing experience where you get your thinking back.
Yeah. So those are some of the personal effects. What about some of the societal costs of sleeping pill use?
So different ways to look at that question. One of them is the use of potentially inappropriate medications. So this is a whole research area that's been done. And when you look at the list of medications, and it's surprisingly long, potentially inappropriate medications for older users has a very long list. One of the sets of criteria is called the Beers criteria. So this was a man's doctor's name, Dr. Beers, Mark Beers. He developed the list, and it's been redeveloped over years. years and years. When you look at the cost of the medications on that list, and you add it all up across the Canadians, the average Canadian who's 65 and older is costing $75 a year in potentially inappropriate medications. Now, not all of them are actually inappropriate medications for the individuals, but there's a lot of wiggle room for reducing the use of those medications. And that I was looking at the list yesterday, six of the top seven of this very long list are sleeping pills. So I'm really excited about opportunities to reduce the use of sleeping pills. We will reduce costs, but one of the biggest things that we can reduce is the cost of side effects. And just one area that I've looked at, which is falls and fractures, and specifically hip fractures, we could actually, if we could get Nova Scotia use of sleeping pills down to the Canadian average, I think we could have an impact on the waiting list for hip fractures and hip replacements, because we're not doing surgeries on emergency hip fractures. Mm-hmm. So one of my estimates is that we could have 80 fewer hip fractures in Nova Scotia if we could get down to the Canadian average in Nova Scotia.
That's a big impact.
That's actually $4 to $5 million in medical costs.
Mm-hmm. So Denmark was seeing this as a problem as well, and they were actually able to reduce the number of these prescriptions by almost half.
Yeah, Denmark is a great place for us to look towards for a variety of reasons. Over about 10 years, they dramatically reduced their use of a whole variety of sleeping pills. And so we tried to figure out what was their magic ingredient, and they did a lot of different things. But one of the unique things that they did is they actually tied your use of sleeping pills to your driving license. So if you're 65 and older in Denmark, you would go for an annual exam, because that's what they were doing in Denmark. And if you had any indicators of risk while driving, that information would go to the Ministry of Transport, and they would take away your license. And one of the indicators was the use of sleeping pills. That's a dramatic policy for Denmark, and it drove the use of sleeping pills down.
Has there been any discussion of that anywhere in Canada?
I don't know if there's any realistic discussion, but certainly there is a discussion about it as an eye-opening way to really talk about the issues here.
So you have a website that is meant to help people who are having problems with sleeping. It's meant to be an offer alternative ways of dealing with what is obviously a big problem.
Right.
Can you tell us about SleepWell?
Sure. So the website mysleepwell.ca is really developed to support people getting access to what is recommended as the number one treatment of insomnia. And it's the number one treatment that you've never heard of. It's called CBTI, Cognitive Behavioral Therapy for Insomnia. And our goal is to make it as accessible to people as sleeping pills are. So we're trying to replace sleeping pills with very practical, pragmatic, easy-to-access therapy. And the really neat thing about CBTI is that you can do it yourself. So many years ago, the research on CBTI was with a therapist. But now the research is when you buy the book that helps you follow the steps for CBTI, it shows that it works well. Or if you buy the app, or if you use the internet to help you get access to the learnings you need to learn about how to sleep well. So CBTI has five major components to it. One of them is the one people know about, which is sleep hygiene, but it's considered to be probably one of the weakest components of it.
So that's don't drink coffee and
Don't exercise right before bed and all of those kind of things. But one of the most powerful ones is sleep restriction therapy. So on the CBTI website, we call that sleep drive. Really promote your sleep drive. And sometimes that means staying up late while you have a very bad relationship with your bed. Stay up late and consolidate your sleep and get yourself nice and tired and get up in the morning at a very fixed time. So there's five components to CBTI. They're listed on mysleepwell.ca. People can go and learn about how to access CBTI themselves as an alternative to the sleeping pills. I've given you two booklets beside you. One is how to get off sleeping pills, and one is how to get your sleep back. And so we will be posting those in a couple of weeks for people to access themselves.
Okay. David, thanks for telling us about this.
Absolutely. Nice to be here.
David Gardner is a pharmacist and researcher at Dalhousie School of Medicine.